Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
I have another book that I'm supposed to pick up from the library because I'm a library person.
You should be a library person.
Everyone should be a library person. Mm-hmm. Rules for Radicals.
Oh, okay. Your nails are crazy cool.
Yeah. My cuticles are a little older now, but like I have a friend who does nails all the time.
Their DNA.
She loves it. Their DNA, right?
That's
that not
cool.
Rad?
Look at you, science nerd.
I know. And then there's the little accent nail. Right?
Oh. Does Philip Kerrigan still within you? With when?
Okay, I was like, DNA? What does that mean?
No.
Like, did I eat his flesh or something? Or
nope, again, you went too far.
Yeah.
Yep, nope, I'm
eating
more met the book.
Again.
Yep. Eating
people again.
Just eating people's hot topic for you.
It is. Said the vegetarian.
Heard it here first. Yeah,
heard it here first. The vegetarian is interested in eating people.
Yeah, no big deal.
Okay, welcome everyone to Season 3, Episode 40 of Podcast for Good. My name is Heather Lucas. I am the Fiscal and Policy Coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive. I am joined by
Jerrica Ferguson. I handle marketing and development for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive.
Excellent, yes. And today, the two of us are going to talk about transitioning back to civilian life, specifically military service members, veterans, moving back into civilian life. Today, we interviewed an organization called Veterans Ecological Trades Collective. You may see one of their programs called Vets Cafe. Destin Denniston, he's the director. He came and he talked about what they do. And when I first kind of set up this podcast thinking about, okay, like military service transitioning into civilian life, I was thinking more in the time frame or like the actual concept of a lot of the veteran organizations that we talk to. But they do something that is completely off-grid to me. Like, it's just kind of mind-blowing. So they are, obviously, the word ecological in there. They're environmental-related. They deal with things like permaculture and growing food and, like, taking land and, like, making it livable and sustainable and agriculture. It's a big part of what they do. And I was just like, wait a minute. And your veteran organization? This is unusual.
So they have vets do that because it helps them work through the land and like really have an engaging way of what's the right word? For a therapeutic reason, right?
Yeah, I mean they get benefits from being part of nature.
Well, I think more and more people are even hearing the word like what is it? It's like forest breathing or something like that.
Forest breathing?
Yeah,
I've not heard that.
Where like walking through the forest gives you relief and like working on land can give you relief as well. Like like being back one with nature.
Sure.
In a way can give many people, and I think particularly veterans, the ability to really not only gain skills, but really help give back in a different way and like be able to focus on the task at hand, which I think helps in many ways, right?
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard this too, where like it's a good thing for people to take their shoes off and like walk barefoot every
grass,
day. Yeah, it's like a grounding thing. You connect back to nature that way easier.
Yeah, I have heard that.
Yeah,
I know. I think the whole idea,
I don't do it at all. I should.
I've done that on campus.
Have you really?
Yeah, over on the temple.
Have the police watched you? Like, oh, there's a barefoot crazy woman in a button down.
No, but I like that you knew I was going to be wearing a button-down like I am wearing right now.
Yes.
Yeah, which I should button all the way up. But Yeah, no, it is true, and it does make you feel better. It creates like a sense of like relief and like mm-hmm. calms down. It's like helps with stress.
Yeah,
yeah,
I should do that more often. I know I heard that also the best kind of breaks that you can take are the breaks that are involving an outdoor element. So like, if you can get outside, do it.
It's really
even
tough.
Even for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's really tough. I think it's going to be tougher because right now our weather has changed to the rainy, dark season.
Yeah.
And where Washingtonians get a lot of seasonal depression.
Yeah. So maybe if I start smelling like a wet dog for the next few months, you'll just know, oh, she took a break and she is stress-free.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
You're going to put up with the wet dog
smell?
Yeah,
we will put it up with.
Well, that actually does transition me into the question of the podcast.
Okay.
So, yes, rabbit hole question is what this is.
Yes.
So I thought about, you know, like questions revolving transitioning from something, right? Transitioning. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, people, they can transition from things like jobs, like gender identities. They can transition like styles. They can, you know, all kinds of different things, attitudes. Mm-hmm. But what else transitions? Were animals, werewolves.
Yeah.
Werewolves transition into wolves.
Yeah.
Werewolves. Ah! Like, if you could be a were animal of any kind, not just a werewolf.
Yeah.
Question of the podcast. What were animal would you be, Jerrica?
So, the Tasmanian devil, as in the cartoon,
okay.
The Tasmanian devil, I would want to be a were
Tasmanian
devil.
A were Tasmanian devil. Specifically that.
That animal. So, like, go to human to that, just because I think it'd be, like, ridiculously over fun to be like and like a tornado and tear stuff up, you know, be like, I'm here. And I don't know,
and people
still
like,
howl or something.
Yeah.
But,
well, and see, I there's definitely no limitations here, so you don't have to be doing it on a full moon like at midnight. I mean, you could be like wear Tasmanian devil from like meeting to meeting.
Yeah, I mean I wouldn't be able to wear silver anymore though.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Or is that just a wolf thing?
No, I mean,
I think werewolves are considered, you can't.
Werewolves, you can't, but there are definitely, like, I've read some nerd stories about were animals and silver being bad, so I think that's a valid point.
Okay. Yeah. What about yourself?
Well, I mean, I'd like to say something. For whatever reason, as we were talking, were swan popped into my head, and then I was like, what?
No.
Why would I want to do that?
Because you're wearing white and black.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, maybe. Were cobra, that'd be pretty sweet.
Ooh, were cobra is way cooler than were swan.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I'd just be a, like a werecobra like going from meeting to meeting, scare the crap out of everyone.
Yeah.
Like, why is there a giant cobra? And I'm like, I gotta go to DSHS.
Shout out to DSHS. Careful. There might be snakes in your cupboards.
Yeah, because I'm coming.
Yeah. Great.
So that.
That's that.
That's that.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're gonna stop being weird for the second, for just a moment, and then transition over to the interview.
These are great segues.
I know. With Destin Denniston, he is the director of Veterans Ecological Trades Collective. Here's that interview. I'm here with Destin Denniston, the director of Veterans Ecological Trades Collective. Destin, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Heather.
Can you give us a little history about Veterans Ecological Trades Collective and what your organization does for the community?
Sure. We started in 2012. I was asked by a group of veterans to come down to Oregon City, Oregon for a permaculture course.
Okay.
And permaculture is an ecological literacy kind of movement that's going on a global basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's taught formally in a number of colleges and universities in the United States, Australia, England.
Okay.
I got my permaculture certificate to begin teaching in 2003, I believe, 2003 or 2004. So this group of veterans found out that I was a veteran and asked me to come down and offer a permaculture course. So we did that, and it was held at the property of a retired colonel.
Okay.
And he had 7 acres. And we went down and we designed gardens and built in systems for his chickens and rabbits and ducks and things. Spent about 2 weeks doing that. And as we did it, it really became clear to me that not only was I having a great time, these folks around me were just lighting up. And when we got to the point, it's like, oh, the raised beds are going in, and I'm using the chainsaw, and they're carrying the logs, and we're putting in hugel cultures, which are, you can imagine, you know, wood rots very slowly in the ground, right?
Yeah.
But it does rot, and it gets a little bit of temperature raise as the bacteria is decomposing it. And you pile the dirt on it, and it's a great sponge because now it's all this wood is down there holding that wood so the water doesn't run away from your plant roots.
Ah.
So we're building these hugel cultures and things like this at this course, and I'm watching these folks just light up because they're doing hard work.
Yeah.
They're doing hard physical work, but they're learning while they're doing it. So this tendency that myself and most other veterans that I know have, just this go-to attitude.
Sure.
Combining that with something that they can use in their own backyard.
Yeah.
And so that's how it all started. Sitting around the campfire, we decided that we were going to do it again.
Okay.
And then we wanted to do it again. So here we are 7 years later. And in 2016, we formalized a nonprofit.
Okay.
We call that nonprofit the Veterans Ecological Trades Collective. Our program content is Vets Cafe.
Okay.
And that's what really happened around that first campfire there in 2012. We were sitting around making jokes about acronyms and how everything in the military... I have acronyms in my head that would make no sense to anybody except another 13...
Government's the same way.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
TLASBAP. You know, really, that's an acronym. So here we are. We want an acronym for the group. And we decided with Veterans Ecological Trades, Conservation, Agriculture, Forestry, and Ecological Design, which spells Vets Cafe.
Okay.
And so that's our program content, is our big joke about that. Yeah, come on down to the cafe.
Nice.
And then we get out the chainsaws.
And they're like, wait, where's the coffee?
What kind of cafe is this?
Yeah.
Well, there's coffee.
Ah, very nice. Coffee. See, you've got that really important piece figured out. The coffee's there.
We have, actually taking a step beyond that, we just finished up our first permaculture course at our new 120-acre site.
Yeah.
And we busted out a full camp kitchen. We hired an Air Force veteran.
Okay.
And she was a chef in the Air Force and now has her own chefing business. Stephanie Torgerson, she's out of Portland, Oregon. And so, you know, when we do these courses, because we're talking about growing food, because we're talking about ethical land use, because we're talking about how do we rear and harvest animals if a person is going to eat animals in a way that is not harmful to the planet, but in a way, hopefully, that is actually good for it. And
sure.
When we start looking at what livestock breeds can do to put carbon in the ground if they're farmed appropriately rather than in CAFOs.
Yeah.
It's incredible. We can put so much carbon in the ground in places that can't grow trees by using livestock. You know, so when we're talking about open prairies, we're talking about scrublands where it's hard for trees to grow because the soil and water conditions aren't really conducive to putting on a lot of biomass in trees.
Yeah.
You can put animals out there to eat that forage. And I know places that literally in 15 years, five times the amount of carbon in the soil as it was when they picked up the land.
Yeah.
So these are the kinds of agricultural practices that we began working with the veterans in our programs to understand. But because everything that we're doing is geared towards how do we grow food, how do we grow our own... It's like if we eat healthy, we stay healthy, right?
Yes, yes.
So, but there's also medicinal value to a lot of the plants that we eat. Food is a medicine.
It is.
And so when we look at it that way, of course we have to have a good chef, you know, to bring that goat back from the walk. We have to have a good chef because we want the food that we grow with care to be prepared by somebody who is skilled in the caring preparation of food. So we brought Chef Steph in, and I tell you what, in the reviews, I know that when everybody is like, the kitchen, oh my God, the food, amazing. I'm like, everything else no matter how challenging it is,
yeah,
if you've got a good cot and you're eating well, you can deal with it.
Nice.
You know?
Nice.
That's during the camp out.
Yeah.
So we really focus on creating a hearth.
Yeah.
At the training. And over the coming years, we'll be building out a full camp kitchen out there. It'll be modeled after the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC kitchens that you see at state parks,
yeah,
and at national forest lands and monuments and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got acres of trees out there. We're not going to do any commercial harvest, but we are bringing back the oak savanna that was hammered by the previous industrial agriculture operation at this site.
Yeah.
So we're going to be retendering the oak savanna back onto the property. And in the context of that oak savanna, that means that we get the opportunity to remove the dug fir trees that are creating shade and preventing the oak release.
Oh.
So we're working with forestry technician and planners up at JBLM, who are also veterans, and working on getting a cut together. We're delineating our wetlands, and we anticipate that we'll start hard into the oak expansion next fall. And I bring this all up because that's where we get the fir trees for our Civilian Conservation Corps kitchen while we're doing an oak savanna expansion and habitat restoration.
So you're
project.
Multitasking.
We're multitasking. Yes. Thank you.
So obviously you serve veterans, but what areas do you serve? Like, where is this 120 acre camp that you're talking
it's
about?
It's 25 minutes south of Olympia.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're around the corner.
Yeah, right around the corner. We are actually located, and if folks driving northbound on I-5 take a gander off to the east side of the freeway to, you know, maybe it's a nice sunny day and you can see Mount Rainier looming over there on the horizon.
Yeah.
We are 1 mile north of the northbound rest stop north of Grand Mount, so I believe about mile marker 90. Can't remember if it's 90 or 91. Our property
is
a big
property,
but it's right there. And you'll start to see some things. We've got some Veterans for Peace flags raised up right there. We've got an artist in residence who is helping us get together a mural project right now.
Nice.
And he has, because he works with Veterans for Peace, he has a project going on where we're going to get a number of Veterans for Peace flags. And then because we're brand new baby organization.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I've got 20 years of networking in the community,
but
the organization is hot fresh, right?
Yeah.
And so we've got all these flags up, and we're going to be working with our partners, and as we get our MOUs secured with them for the kinds of things, then our partners' flags are going to replace those flags that we have up there next. So people will be able to see over the next couple of months our partnerships unfold. These are the folks that we're going to work with
in
the community. And so, for instance, we work with the Washington State Department of Veterans Affairs.
Sure.
We're working with the Veteran Conservation Corps program there. And it looks like starting next year, crossed fingers, knock on wood thing, we're
going to
be picking up a couple of intern positions with the VCC program.
Okay.
So we'll have vets on the site that are in college that are there that will be able to take our programming and also help be concierge to the people that arrive, so that when we do workshops and things, they'll be kind of the liaison and registration person, but then they get all the workshops and
the experience.
And unlike all the other vets that come to our workshops, most of our workshops will tend to be free of charge. There's a couple of things that it's like, okay, we might not get something covered and we'll have to have a nominal fee to cover an actual expense, but most of the stuff we do, especially the trainings, are free of charge. And so we anticipate next year we're looking to have 20 to 25 folks through our permaculture course, which is going to take place from August 15th to August 29th. I think it's August 15th to the 29th. We actually just scheduled that in coordination with another one of our partners, the Washington State chapter of the Farmer Veteran Coalition, which is a national organization. And then we're going to have some saw days out there, chainsaw days, and those will either be specific to members of Team Rubicon,
mm-hmm.
Who is coming out and they're doing training certification operations out there.
Yeah.
So that when they respond to natural disasters, their Sawyers are up to snuff on the
sure.
jobs that need to be done, so that they're working safely, so that they understand how to operate in complex environments. And frankly, you know, there's a lot of it's really sexy to, you know, you're cutting down a big tree. But big trees are fairly predictable, especially conifers are
yeah.
fairly predictable as long as they're not rotten. But little trees, you know, things that are 14 inches, maybe they're growing up through some other stuff and they have a lot of tension on it. It's the little trees that get you every time. I have watched more people get hurt from 4-inch diameter limbs than I have seen from anything else.
I would never have thought that.
It's because they snap back. It's because they're under weird tension.
Yeah.
It's because they move faster than a big tree does. A big tree is really steady. Once it starts to fall, it starts to fall, and then it gains momentum.
Sure, sure.
Little tree just goes, bam.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So it's really important to get those certs tight for them.
Yeah.
When they're working in those environments that they're swamping out something, you know, somebody's house is,
yeah.
you know, had a bunch of debris come from a landslide, and so they got to get in, they got to cut it into pieces small enough to move it out,
yeah.
and, you know, because they're not junking the whole thing. It's like people's lives are in that house.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
So you mentioned you're a veteran.
Yes.
Can you speak about your experience transitioning from military service into civilian life? What was that like for you?
This is the long, deliberate pause with the thousand-yard stare. I am a veteran. I served a very short period. I
uh-huh.
did not go overseas. I was involved in a accident during training.
Yeah.
And I spent 3 months in the hospital.
Oh, okay.
And there was... I had suffered a head injury
mm-hmm.
during this training exercise. This was prior to... everything that we know now, the fortunate result of unfortunate engagements is that we know a lot more about head injuries now than we did when I had mine.
Sure.
And so for me, transitioning was really, I wanted nothing to do with the VA or anything Army because I felt that I'd been pretty jacked over.
Yeah.
They told me because of the severity of my head injury that I would not be capable of using my GI Bill, for instance.
Wow.
So, yeah, they literally told me, well, we know you're applying for it, but, you know, we're going to have you do a psych eval, and because of the severity of your head injury, what that psych came back and said was, this guy's never going to make it in college, don't waste the money. So we're going to take that from you.
Wow,
and
that's unbelievable.
I didn't have any benefits at the time
yeah.
either. I had not made a claim. Well, I had made a claim, but it was denied. And the thing was, is I tried to carry that claim myself. And because I was the veteran who didn't want to trust the VA, I wasn't going to walk into the VFW where I wasn't qualified. The American Legion was another organization in league with those that had put me in this position to begin with.
Yeah.
So my transition in some ways is atypical.
Okay.
And it wasn't until I walked into a martial arts dojo in 1994, and I had gone to college, I'd gotten a job, I'd gone to college, and I completed an associate's degree,
mm-hmm.
and then I went back to the VA, and I said, okay, you told me I couldn't do it. Here's my associate's degree. I want my damn GI Bill.
Yeah.
And then I got it. And so I went to Evergreen State College on the GI Bill. While I was at Evergreen State College, I began studying martial arts. The dojo that I went into had a number of veterans in it, some of them Vietnam era, some of them slightly post-Vietnam.
Okay.
A couple of Vietnam era combat veterans, Uncle Kaleo Smythe, Jerry Quinnis, who worked with the state VA offices here, Bud Potomai Cook, who is our instructor, and they kind of, you know, they grabbed me by the ear.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Hey, kid, you're going to college, and you're getting yourself squared away here, but you really need to get your veterans' issues taken care of."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean?" And they're like, you need to get a claim, you need to make a claim, you need to place it, because you, if something happens to you, you're going to be gone, but somebody's going to have to bury you.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got burial rights. You know, you've got this money that's going to take care of that. So you're going to save somebody. And this is the samurai training. This is the martial way. So you don't leave a mess and expect somebody else to clean it up.
Sure.
So it's like the monk, he carries his funeral dispensation with him.
Okay.
Right? So they're like, you go in and get that VA stuff taken care of, because if something happens to you, your people are going to be left carrying the bag on the cost of your passing,
sure.
et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where it started.
Okay.
You know? If they would have tried to tell me that you've got benefits coming and, you know, go fight for them, I'd have been like,
Yeah.
But when they told me, you have a responsibility, and that's when they knew they had me hook, line, and sinker. Samurai means one who serves.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they had me because they were like, okay, this kid will take care of other people even if he won't take care of himself. And so that's how my transition began.
Okay.
And now, years later, doing this project, I see the same thing. Veterans who are like, nah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to claim. It's not. We're working with a guy who got out in 1978 after serving in Africa as a Green Beret, Angola.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a war in Angola. Right?
Yeah.
And so he's never filed a claim for anything.
It's been 40 years.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah.
And we finished up his claim a couple days ago. First
nice.
Claim he's ever made. And he's got all of his records, fortunately. He was savvy on that. He had all his records. So it was pretty quick. We're not a VSO, but we're a bunch of vets who have kind of gone through a grinder. And now we're learning to partner with organizations that 20 years ago I was terrified of.
Sure.
I walked into the state VA in 2012 after we did our first permaculture course. And I said to the then director of the VCC, Mark Fisher, I said to him, sir, agriculture is going to take off in this state, and frankly, I would never come here and talk business with a government organization if I wasn't ready to die on the hill that I'm standing on.
Yeah.
And now that I know that this is where I want to be, I'm going to do everything. And so now we have their buy-in from
sure.
the WDVA, and it's like, yeah, this is the hill I'm going to die, and I'm going to die spending my life doing everything I can to preserve rural character, to restore damaged rural lands, and to create job opportunities for veterans in that context. And now that I know what my mission is, I'm totally like,
you're
here
living
we go.
It. You're entirely
I'll work
there.
With anybody.
Yeah.
So that's my transition. Yeah.
That's kind of, that transitions into my next question. The CFD has a number of veteran or military-specific charities in our program, and we've had charities on the podcast before talking about veterans' issues, veterans' rights, veterans' dental care, but never have we had a charity have anything to do with agriculture, permaculture, the environment, and veterans. So, obviously, your organization's unique. Why do you believe the ties to agriculture and are important for you and important for these veterans that you're working with?
Right now in Washington State, this was not true 10 years ago.
Okay.
Right now in Washington State, we have at least 8 nonprofits that are focused on serving veterans in agriculture or conservation.
Okay.
10 years ago, not one of them existed.
Yeah.
These were all driven by individual cells of veterans in particular areas, and as a response to the work that was done to create Growing Veterans, in a response to the work that was done to create the Vets on the Farm program, the Grub Victory Garden project, the 78th Street Boots to Roots program down in Vancouver. Now we have a statewide organization that is working to coordinate with all of them to create opportunities. We're looking at creating programs that a veteran who is currently, or excuse me, a service member who is currently, you know, maybe this person is in the reserves and they have to head out for you know, 6 months on an assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're being mobilized.
Okay.
They've got a small farm operation. Maybe it's just a horse. Maybe it's, you know, a dozen chickens. Got neighbors?
Yeah.
Okay, good. You got neighbors. Well, maybe we also can be a neighbor.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the things we can do is, so we're actually looking right now, and we're talking with PCC Farmland Trust
yeah.
around this. And when I say we, I'm speaking, I got to change my hat because I have a couple of hats. So this one says Farmer Veteran Coalition.
Okay.
In addition to being the director of Vets Cafe, I'm also the vice chair of the Farmer Veteran Coalition of Washington
okay.
State. So I'm helping all of these veterans across the state create a platform for transfer of knowledge, skills, and labor.
Yeah.
We're talking with the Vets on the Farm program in Spokane. We're talking with folks in the Okanagan at Tatley Outpost, a 1,000-acre for-profit veterans project.
Yeah.
And 1,000 acres?
That's
yeah,
a bit
I just,
much.
I just said that. That's huge. And the folks up at Growing Veterans and Grub and on down the line. So that, you know, this is one, for instance, the reservist who needs to mobilize.
Yeah.
But there's a number of other, for instances. You have a farm owner who doesn't want to see their land developed. Well, do we have veterans? Because I've gotten calls personally asking, I've got an 80-acre farm out near Onalaska,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to see it turned into 5-acre parcels. Do you have somebody I can work with to buy this? And I'm like, I don't right now, but we are building capacity for that. And it's like, how dare I look at somebody and say, you've got to live another 20 years.
Yeah.
You know? But if all goes well, within 2 to 3 years, we'll have formalized a lot of these systems that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Being able to, there are more veterans that want to go into farms than there are farms available is my personal suspicion.
Okay.
But farming as a knowledge set is something that has been bled from our culture. Less than 1% of the people in the United States today could grow enough food to feed themselves
yeah.
if they had the time.
Yeah.
Even if they had the time, they wouldn't know how. And so there's been a concentration of growth and production into businesses, into large-scale farming. And the farms that we have on the western side of Washington State tend to be much smaller because we have a much more varied topography.
Yeah.
Topography than eastern Washington. It's hard to get a 400-acre spread that you can manage easily out here.
Yeah.
120 acres, I've got flat land.
Yeah.
You know, down there on the prairie. Our nonprofit has flat land. But there's not many places where you can put 120 acres down and have flat land.
On this side of the state,
yeah. on this side of the state. It doesn't happen in a lot of places.
Yeah.
I know a couple of operations that are in the 200 to 400. There are hills everywhere, roads, curving all. Mm-hmm. You can't go directly to any place on it. So it's very different operating farms on this side of the state than it is in the east side of the state or in the Great Prairies, in the Basin or in the Great Prairies, because we don't have direct access. But we have, in this area, I mean, we have the highest population per capita of veterans in the state,
okay.
located in Thurston, South Pierce
it
County.
It makes sense with JBLM,
with JBLM
being so close.
Right there.
Yeah.
A lot of people just retire out or they ETS and then they're like, I found a nice house within, you know, in my comfort zone. I know
sure.
the area. There's a lot of trees. It's nice. I
yeah,
can get to the water.
Yeah.
This is great. Mountains
yeah.
are an hour drive away. And a lot of people stay.
Okay.
I find, you know, last year we had close to 400 specific contacts with our nonprofit engaged in training, etc.
Yeah.
We're looking at putting about 20 to 50 through a permaculture design course a year, and I don't see it slowing down. I see it picking up. It's like we're right now struggling to be at a capacity to serve the number of people who want to work with us.
Yeah. So essentially, like, are you really providing jobs for veterans? I mean, and job skills?
We're providing job skills.
Yeah.
And we work with, one of our partners is Enterprise for Equity.
Uh-huh.
And a veteran that comes through our core program, 80-hour training, is then, Enterprise for Equity will work with them to build a business plan.
Okay.
And then if they bring that business plan back to our stewardship committee with the nonprofit, they have the opportunity to open that business plan on our site.
Okay.
And we're looking at what our potential capacity for that is. We suspect somewhere between 15 and 20 veterans that we'll actually be able to put into, you have a job and we have a veterans green business park.
Yeah.
Right? And we'll be doing long-term leases or lease to own.
Okay.
So instead of an incubator that is like, oh, you've been here for 3 years, you've got your business model tweaks worked out, now get off and go to a piece of land that you've never worked and see how that jumbles your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, no, we'll sign you into a long-term lease or a lease to own on this land. You don't have to get up and jump off of it. You can start your business here. And as we put all that together, our goal is to leave those veterans with businesses in place and then go find another piece of property and do it again.
Okay. So for veterans who you're working with, have they had difficulty understanding, like, how to transition themselves from just being in military service to being a person who is going to start a business plan and have their own property, their own business, their own skills, their own income in this right. different capacity? Are they having struggles with that?
So one of the biggest things that I think that we offer is we offer the ability for a veteran to stand up their own business
uh-huh.
as part of a cohort.
Okay.
And that means that
so they're not alone.
You have a team.
Yeah.
You're not doing it by yourself.
Yeah.
You may not be working the same business plan as the veteran that you're shoulder to shoulder with, but you'll be able to check in. And as a matter of fact, the way that we've got it designed, that's what the stewardship committee is about, is that mutual aid support.
Uh-huh.
And so what we want to see is veterans that are stepping in with a business plan that is like, this is what I want to produce, and this is how I'm going to support the people around me so that my production can be optimized also.
Yeah.
So what we're actually, I mean, at the end of the day, we're building a model. Every veteran was told to cooperate and collaborate when they were in service. You will
sure.
cooperate and collaborate with your peers.
Yeah.
Right? And then they get out and it's like, they spent all of this time forging these intense team bonds.
Uh-huh.
And now it's like, okay, go do it on your own.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, it's like, it's, and there's a lot of wide open space out here that's very crowded.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to find 5 acres of land.
Sure.
Let alone 100.
Yeah.
Right? And you got a business plan, you've got to be able to produce certain volume. You know that you want to grow and upscale.
Yeah.
Well, what if your growth and upscale, instead of looking like more like, we're going to get 5 acres, and then when we can get 20, we'll stay with the same production model, but we'll do 20 acres of it,
mm-hmm.
and then we can cut our margins. Like, well, what if it looked like, oh, I work with somebody who wants my product, and we actually can collectively manage a vertically integrated value-added production system, so that instead of growing more on, or excuse me, instead of getting more land to grow on,
yeah,
because you're working as a team, you can grow more and keep building ways to produce more and more.
Okay.
And this is also why we talk about the need for perennial production versus annual production, especially here on the wet side of the state where we can do trees, we can do berries, we can do things that produce for a long time and provide habitat while they're doing it.
Yeah.
So we have this opportunity to create a vertically integrated production system. Veterans businesses grow not because they expand their footprint, but because they increase and optimize their output potentials.
Mm-hmm. So for the veterans that you're working with, mm-hmm. have they had difficulties finding like jobs before they've come to you? I mean, are there a lot of really military-friendly employers out there?
There's a lot of military-friendly employers out there, but there's a lot of veterans out there who might not be able to say. I mean, there was several years right after I got out that I was like, I didn't know if I was going to be okay the next day.
Sure.
Am I going to be able to show up? My head, I might have splitting headaches. I might have been up with night sets, mm-hmm. having terrible dreams, or I might have been, you know, having really bad gut problems because of my stress level.
Sure.
And I don't know if I'm going to be able to show up tomorrow. And if I do, I might be such a mess that I get fired.
Yeah.
And that was the first 5 years after I got out.
Wow.
So there was, and like I said, I'm not even a combat vet. This was just the result of being in the wrong place at the wrong time and having my can. Like, they broke my egg.
Yeah.
I got my can rattled. I know veterans who, I know a vet who stood up in front of a radar array on a naval ship.
Yeah.
And he doesn't remember anything for the next 16 months.
Oh, wow.
You know? And he's got a job now. And he worked with the Veteran Conservation Corps. That's when I met him. He's got a job now where he does native plant restoration. And he worked his way into that job working as an intern through the VCC, because one of the things about that VCC job is that those folks up there understand. You get hit by something hard, and there might be days that you need to be out. You know, you might be triggered. You might need just to rest because your body is going through a healing process, or, you know, something needs to be operated on. You just don't, because your back isn't going to last that long. But you still want to engage. You still want to participate.
Yeah.
But nobody who's asking you for a regular 32 to 40 is going to be able to pick you up because you can't provide that reliability.
Sure.
And so that's about 30 to 40% of the veterans that we find that are interested in our project, because they know, oh, if I'm my own employer,
mm-hmm.
I can do it at my own pace. I've got a little bit of stability because I've got a disability claim coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got some comp coming from that. And if I've got an acre of land and I can produce $20,000 worth of value off of that and feed myself.
Yeah.
Well, suddenly I look stable. But if I try to live in an apartment and hold down a job in 3 weeks, I might be ready to jump out a window or throw somebody out of a window.
Sure, sure.
And I know a lot of veterans who are just like, if I just have a garden, and if, especially if I can, when I feel like it, share time in that garden with other people, then I can do this for a living.
So that, I find this fascinating because, like, gardening and tending to the land, like, that is something, for whatever reason, it's like this weird humanistic thing that we all have, kind of this need to be connected to nature, and a lot of us don't. Like, we're constantly in the concrete jungle, and we don't go back to nature, and we don't do things, we don't go camping, we don't garden, we don't spend time amongst the trees, right? But I find it fascinating that this is something that so many people are really, it's appealing for them. Veterans, obviously, like, you guys are service-oriented. You're serving the public, you're serving the country, you're serving your state, you're being part of a unit, but then, like you said earlier, once you get out into, like, the private sector, that connection just doesn't exist anymore.
It's hard to find.
Yeah. So, What can you speak about what it is like when you're out and you're like with a chainsaw, or you're gardening, or you're building some of these permacultures, like, together as a group? What is that like? What's the camaraderie like?
I think my favorite is when I look out and I'm like, I didn't have to give a whole lot of direction.
Yeah.
Times that there's not a, there's just a task to be done and everybody gets it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I'm thinking of, you know, at our course, we had to move a lot of water around. And, the first day or two, it was pretty messy. And by day three, with only one kind of group check-in about how the process was going.
Yeah.
You know, we needed to move water because the condition of our facility is such that we've got an outdoor camp.
Okay.
And so we were bringing in water for the camp, you know, don't have a well on the site.
Sure.
This kind of thing. So we're bringing, and I was just amazed. It was literally 48 hours. There was one group check-in and all of the water issues, like, how do we move it? What's the correct way to store it? How to, it was just figured out and it was squared away. And, you know, just little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Watching a group of people that square away almost unconsciously.
Yeah.
Right? And that just... My military experience was very short, but I saw that, and that was something that I valued. And then going into a martial tradition, that was also... When you walk into the dojo, there is... an area that you sit down and you take off, and everybody puts their shoes in order.
Okay.
Right? And the reason is because if you all have to run out of the building because it's on fire, well, it's a hell of a lot easier to get your shoes on if you don't have to look for them in a pile.
Sure.
And you knew that you put them in order.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So just working with a group of people that implicitly understands and gets that, to me, it's a huge lift.
Yeah.
Because then I can... actually think about the work of direction rather than managing a task.
Yeah,
they manage themselves. So I just get to sit back and say, what is the potential?
Yeah.
What can this group accomplish? What is the thing that we will all sit around a campfire in 10 years and toast one another for our roles in making something happen?
Yeah.
I can really put my mind in that direction rather than how do we get the firewood where it's going to be dry?
Sure, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, do you think that veterans have a harder time with private sector work because of things like the bottom line is important in private sector work, of course. Your shareholders, your values, the growth of the company financially, like... That's always really important, but like, if it's not a connected organization,
there are veterans who are very good at the business world,
yeah,
and who are able to produce bottom lines with huge amounts of integrity under great scrutiny, and show that their models work and run a business.
Mm-hmm.
The business that was at our site 10 years prior to us was owned by a Vietnam veteran.
Okay.
And he was a gunner on an airship,
mm-hmm.
Flying in combat engineers, flying combat engineers out of the field in Vietnam. And he created a business that was worth several million dollars. And he passed away rather unexpectedly.
Sure.
He contracted pancreatic cancer. Mm. And following his death, and the property, he was leasing it.
Yeah.
So the owner couldn't move his business's effects. He wasn't there to manage the movement of the effects and resources. So there was a long period of trying to sort that thing out, because one thing, even though he had a very successful business, one thing that he failed to do was write a succession plan.
Ah.
And that lack of writing a succession plan meant that that property sat idle for about 3 years while everybody else figured out what to do. And by that time, it had been vandalized. By 5 years after the time that he left, there probably wasn't an unbroken window in the building.
Yeah.
Most of the file cabinets had been dumped, and it all sat there like that until it was donated to us. And so we went through all the files. Well, I found personal notes that he had written. I actually sent them back to his family because that seemed like the only appropriate thing to do with it. But in it, he started out as like, PTSD is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 15 pages long. So he goes over the first two or three pages explaining how he got his business built and the way that he's and then he wrote, PTSD is a lie, not really.
Ah.
And then he spent another 12 pages explaining how he had been ignoring his PTSD.
Sure.
Of course, not every veteran has PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Not every veteran has service-connected trauma.
Yeah.
But it is possible to be a very high-functioning businessman. business person and still have an extreme level of PTSD or other trauma that is not being managed with. And yeah. he, in that writing, it's like, I cried when I read it.
Yeah.
Because he was right. You can stuff, and that's what I did for the first 5 years. I stuffed it in a hole, and I wasn't going to, you know, I didn't even know that I was doing it.
Sure.
But I really was not going to talk to those people about those things because they had hurt me and it was not okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now, you know, I go back and I read that and I send it back to his family. And it's possible to be an astute business person and make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Run a business that has 25 or more employees and still have things that you haven't reconciled.
Sure.
That said, our space is not for that veteran.
Yeah.
When I say our space, we don't, somebody who needs our services doesn't already have a business worth $1 million.
True.
And we're not in the business of trauma therapy or recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But we are a resource for those who need both trauma therapy and recovery and business plan and writing.
Mm-hmm.
So the business plan, the writing, the and access to land, those are the things that we focus on. But because this is an intersectional world,
yeah,
because we live in a Venn diagram that doesn't have enough circles and all of the overlaps,
yeah,
we realize that the segment of veterans that we're working with are not likely to have businesses. They are likely to have a background of military trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be more going on there than our mission is capable of carrying. And that's why we have resource partners.
Yeah.
That's why we work with the state VA. That's why we're developing MOUs with, the VA offered us a couple of weeks ago. They're like, next time you do an intensive, we would like to embed an MSW. So let's talk about how to make that happen.
Yeah.
And that, for us, is just, it's invaluable. Because that MSW is not there to sit down in a chair and have you sit down in a chair. That MSW is there to watch them when they're not having an issue to talk about. And like, this is how I plant a tree.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, and quickly, MSW, for those who don't know?
Masters in Social Work.
Okay.
Because really, like, we've got, we're setting up a caretaker,
mm-hmm.
A couple of caretaker positions at our site right now.
Okay.
And I know half a dozen vets that are bouncing around from state park to state park.
Okay.
Living in vehicles and camping because, you know, you got your veterans pass, you've got 2 weeks at this park, and then you can roll around the corner and
yeah.
2 weeks again. And, you know, when you're living on a disability income of 800 or 1,005 a month,
yeah.
Paying all those other bills and having all those other obligations, it's like you now have nothing left at the end of the
yes.
month. But if I've got a truck with a topper and a good tent, I can make $1,500 last all month and me and my dog will be just fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Well, I've got a camp that's and you can come outside and work in the garden. Or you can just go get lost in the woods.
Yeah.
And so this is the kind of like entry level that we expect. And of course, there's a wide spectrum of vets with a wide spectrum of desires, interests, abilities, etc.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, we just had in our last course one of the fellows who came in. I said he's going to be a caretaker. He was doing the 2 week camp thing. We're going to move him into a caretaker spot, and he's like, "I can grow gardens here." I'm like, "Yeah, you grow gardens all you want." Maybe he's not interested in a business, and that's fine.
Yeah.
What he is interested in is stability and improving himself. So we've got a win situation. We can be there and be present
mm-hmm.
and be a responsible ally as you choose these paths.
Yeah.
Then we've got another veteran who's like, I'm fine. And the thing is I don't really like my job.
Okay.
I want to transition out of it smoothly into growing food.
Okay.
I know that if I jumped into growing food right now, I would not be financially stable for more than a year.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel like a good business plan. How do I do it slowly so that within 5 to 6 years, I'll have fully transferred out of the job that I have now and have the farm that I want to build up and running?
Yeah.
So that's the margin of veterans that we serve.
Yeah.
And giving them job skills, that's one of the... We want to advance careers. We
sure.
want to advance employment. But giving them job skills and a stable place, if you focus on trying to give somebody a job and they aren't stable,
it's not going to
work out.
Yeah.
You've got to take it one step at a time.
Yeah.
So we've got, you know, 3 steps on our step ladder.
Yeah.
And the first step is got to stable out.
Mm-hmm.
Second step is get your skills going, find your niche
mm-hmm.
for employment. And make that happen. And the third one is, once you've got it all under a roll, come back and mentor.
Yeah.
Come back and mentor. We're not going to produce a generation of well vets by putting them on a couch in a room
mm-hmm.
talking about what happened. We're going to produce a generation of well vets by working shoulder to shoulder with each other, sitting around a campfire, and enjoying the things that are good that we shared while being open to the fact that we all are carrying scars somewhere.
Yeah.
And we get to talk about that, but it's after dancing and singing and eating.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. So let's say someone hears this podcast
mm-hmm.
and they want to begin giving to Veterans Ecological Trades Collective. Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
We were donated 120 acres
mm-hmm.
with buildings that are completely vandalized, no plumbing, no electricity, and no traditional farm infrastructure because it was an industrial farm.
Okay.
And on top of that, the prior uses created some barriers to healthy production.
Okay.
There are some concerns about some of the industrial uses of the land in terms of the contaminants.
Sure, yeah.
We're not anywhere near like a FEMA rollout or anything, but we've still got to understand better, which I mention these four things because over the next 4 years, we're looking at our facilities and structure build out
mm-hmm.
To probably be in the $600,000 to $800,000 range.
Okay.
So that's to give a scope.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, what will the donations that people give us produce?
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get fencing up for okay. the livestock that we're being donated. We're being donated goats
mm-hmm.
from the Lost Peacock Creamery.
Yeah.
Will be, and that's a veteran-run operation.
Okay.
They're going to be donating their wethers from their dairy operation, so we'll be getting the male goats, neutered male goats, for our operation, and they'll be donated, but we've got to get fencing up.
Yeah.
Well, we also need to have irrigation up, so we've got to clear one of our wells. The wells were formerly Department of Water Righted Wells,
okay.
but because of, I believe it was the Birch. No, it's not Birch. I can't remember. It starts with a B, I think. But there was a recent decision, and basically, because these wells haven't been used for over 5 years, they don't have water rights anymore.
Interesting.
Well, we can get rights for residential permitting, so we have to get our wells cleared, and then we have to get the residential permitting stuff so that we can. And in Washington State, fortunately, there is a provision that allows for agricultural livestock watering as opposed to agriculture irrigation of plants.
Okay.
So we will, as far as I, you know, I got to work this out to make sure that I'm totally legally correct about this before we act on it, but it looks like we'll be able to water our animals.
Okay.
And then with a residential volume well, that's plenty enough to manage the sizes of gardens that we're actually going to be putting in.
Uh-huh.
So we've got irrigation, and then we've got we're building an off-grid solar system, because by the time we got done talking to PSE, we discovered that getting our electricity hooked back up would actually not only cost as much or potentially more than an off-grid solar system, but then we'd have to pay a monthly bill to them as well.
Of course, of course.
So we're just like, okay, well, instead of spending $20,000 to $25,000 to get everything hooked back up, why not just spend that on an off-grid solar, and then we don't have to pay anybody a bill. We've just got annual maintenance
cost. You just have that cost,
So we're looking at things like that. So literally, like, $10 buys us 6 feet of fencing, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be a T-post and a few feet of fence. $50, that's looking at doing something like, you know, I had $50 right now that I was going to spend. Actually, I have to go pay taxes for the property. Being a nonprofit does not mean that you get a pass land taxes.
It is true.
So, you know, right now, the next thing that I do after I leave here is I go pay our taxes for the year.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I have to say, Thurston County has really been great. We discussed what's happening at the property, why the property sat idle for 10 years, talked about the zoning, all of that. And they've been great, and they're like, yeah, actually, the way that land's been treated, the way that it's zoned, and the overlays on it are all in conflict, and we need to resolve this. Thanks for pointing it out.
Okay.
And so I feel very fortunate to have county staff and county direction coming from the commission that understands what industrial land uses do to our landscape.
Yeah.
We've got a cleanup situation there, right? So $50... I might pitch that to some water testing. If I had $1,200, I could actually make a pretty good pick at where the limits of some of the contaminants that we have on the property. We've got, I can't remember what the numbers are, but it's like we are 5% over. 5% over the state's minimum threshold for volunteer reporting.
Okay.
Right. So we're like literally just like, all we have to do is give it a couple of gentle pets with a remediation project, and it won't even be high enough that the state would be like, oh, yeah, you can voluntarily clean that up and we can direct you on how to do that. They'd be like, that's like not actually even high enough that we're going to put energy into supporting a voluntary cleanup.
Yeah.
So we're that close. And so, you know, we'd be putting money into, like, actually getting the monitoring done so that we could figure out the exact spread of... Because they had an effluent pond out there that they were... You know, it was probably in the neighborhood of 3 million chickens over a 10-year period got dumped into a 2-acre pond.
Wow.
And when you're talking chickens that were vaccinated with mercury, you're talking chickens that were eating a lot of raw pellet seed, and arsenic is a component in the shells on a lot of our grains.
Yeah.
We thresh it out. It's not, there's not enough in there to hurt you, but if you take all of them and put them in one place,
it adds up.
It adds up. So we've got that to clean up, and yeah, that's where the money goes. Those are the kinds of things. And then the expansion of the oak forest. We're going to start a nursery, and we're going to start popping oak acorns and making trees and getting them out there and expanding that oak savanna on that property, increasing habitat. We'll be working next year with Center for Natural Lands Management.
Okay.
Putting up boxes for the native bluebirds out there, because their habitat has been all but decimated by starlings, and I believe it's the starling that gets into their nests.
Okay.
So you can build a starling-proof nest, but the natural habitat for them is gone. And we've got, you know, I've watched osprey taking bass out of the pond in the back.
Nice.
We've got a resident mating pair of red-tail hawks.
Yeah.
We've done a bird count out there, and we came up with 60-plus species of birds out there. We're talking with the Black Hills Audubon Society about getting a tour out there to come and really help us do a bird count.
Nice.
Because, like, I can be like, I know 15 of these, and then there's 40 that I'd have to go look them up in a
cave. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, just building those partnerships is really exciting. And those are the kinds of things that donations will pay for. We're going to be doing, you know, this round, this mm-hmm. phase one round for the next 3 years. This is really going to be about getting the on-the-ground infrastructure for the farm together, making sure that we're not getting into any ground that's going to be problematic for health, and okay. then figuring out the remediation of those areas, which looks like it's limited to about 3 acres.
Okay.
I think we've got 120. So,
yeah.
So those are the kinds of things it'll go towards. And getting, getting a well operational so that we can have water on site, and having off-grid solar power,
mm-hmm.
that right there, I mean, that allows us to open the door.
Yeah.
Right? We've got the insurance for events, but until we can give somebody a cup of water and sit them down in a room with some music playing and, you mm-hmm. know, have a classroom.
Sure.
That's going to be vital to our operations. So that's where donations go.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, Destin, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking about your organization and all of the things that you do that are, again, mind-blowing. Like, this is really cool what you do.
Heather, much appreciated. Yeah, I'm really grateful that you called and asked us to come in.
Right on. That was our interview with Destin Denniston. He talked about the awesome things that their organization does. I was blown away.
Yeah, can you explain some of the things that you heard from them?
Well, I mean, just like the science-based stuff that he talked about, having gone to school to get degrees and figure out, like, permaculture. He talked about, I can't remember the word he used, I'll have to find it, but taking, like, wood, like logs, and putting them into the ground, covering them with dirt, and that's like how you retain water in an area so things can grow.
Wait.
Yeah, right? So instead of just being like, this is a place where we're irrigating, if you actually bury some wood with dirt, and there's obviously more to it than that, but like, it does retain water, so you don't have to use as much water to irrigate.
That's amazing.
Right?
More people should know that.
I know. He also talked about utilizing livestock in ways to get carbon into the soil and into the ground. I saw a short story on that farmer in California doing that, and he talked about doing that and how that really generates growth mm-hmm, for the soil. Mm-hmm. So things that may not have grown there, they start to grow there.
That's great. I mean, soil acidity is really a serious mm-hmm. problem.
Yeah,
that we're
it is.
Be facing more and more of. So it's great that we have people working right now on rebolstering our soil.
Absolutely, yeah. And he totally believes that agriculture is going to be more and more of a prevalent field for people in our state in the future.
I can see. I mean, we already have not just. I mean, WSU is leading in agricultural. Developments when it comes to, you know, majors and things, but I'm sure that other schools are also.
Shout out WSU.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, yeah, I find all of this very fascinating, and the science nerd part of me is tickled, and I do want to learn more.
Good. Yeah. That's what these podcasts are about.
Yeah. Helping you learn more and connect with charities in the Combined Fund Drive.
Dun, 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 dun. Do you have any facts?
Seems
trivia? No? Are you leaving me hanging this time?
I do. I'm leaving you hanging.
It's okay. I felt like that's what the next transition was going to be. But, you know, we've been transitioning so well.
So let's transition to the next thing, upcoming events.
Okay.
Pretty much at this point in the campaign, I mean, we're in the middle of the campaign, so... really, the big things that are coming up in the future, other than just, hey, guess what, guys, it's holidays, Giving Tuesday.
Yeah, Giving Tuesday, if you participated last year, that's going to be the little e-grams that you can do. It's really nice where you can kind of send a card for that, and we'll give out more information to come, but it is Giving Tuesday following Black Friday.
Yeah, so this year that's December 3rd.
It doesn't fall Black Friday, I don't. Yeah, it does follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Black Friday and Thanksgiving are late this year. So,
yes, that's right.
Yeah, it is kind of funny how Thanksgiving does that back and forth thing.
I know.
And then Giving Tuesday happens to fall on our last week to give.
It does, which is also really great. So last week to give, you're going to see the last of our Friday Flicks videos. And again, it's not really the last week to give. You can keep giving. But we do that so we can wrap up the giving campaign. So during that week, you're going to continue to see if your volunteers blast from us to make sure you get those out. And, of course, Giving Tuesday promotion for that, too.
Yes. So if you guys want to get your fundraisers all sorted away, that's the perfect opportunity. We love it then. But, yeah, I'm going to transition to the end of this podcast.
Ooh, end of the pod.
Dun, dun, dun. You out?
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like it needed some, like, juice at the end.
Okay, too bad we don't have any kind of visual for that, because that was beautiful.
Yeah, I did the, what is it called?
Dab. Yeah, you did dab. You dabbed again in a government office. All right. On that note, we're out.
Out.
Bye.